Welcome to First Bite, the companion podcast to the Pride of Detroit PODcast, prideofdetroit.com for everything about the Detroit Lions from SB Nation, Pride of Detroit on Twitter. It's coming through your ears. It's what we do. We told you we'd be back. We told you we'd be back in 2017, and here we are, your preview podcast for the Detroit Lions going up against the Seattle Seahawks. I am Chris Lemieux, your adequate host, and joining me as always is Ryan Matthews at Ryan underscore POD. Ryan, we're in the playoffs, baby.
We are in the playoffs because of Eli Manning's dumb face, right, Chris?
Yes, his very stupid looking face, generating stupid at a remarkable level, almost as much as his brother.
Like thank that you. Whole Manning thank clan. You, Big Blue. Just,
that whole Manning clan just generates dumb face energy for the world. It's a renewable energy source, but we will praise them this time.
As you can see, 2017 is no different for Chris Lemieux from 2016.
No,
in terms
I'm
of how he feels
already.
About the Mannings.
No, and I'm sweating already. I thought you were talking about just my pins and needles, but we're here, and man, not great, not a great feeling from the Lions crowd, who has been. I don't know. I think this is probably the best matchup they could get, Ryan, with the Seattle Seahawks. Wouldn't you say?
You know, all things considered, it was either on the road at Seattle or at home against the Giants. We've already seen what the Giants can do to the Lions, so hey, let's go test it out. Let's go test out the field up at CenturyLink.
And speaking of field and testing out and the Seahawks, let's bring in our guest here. We have a guest every First Bite, writers and podcasters from our sister sites across the SB Nation network. This week, it is Lars Russell from Field Goals, everything about the Seattle Seahawks. Lars, how are you, my man?
I'm excited. I'm looking for the first round of the playoffs. Welcome to the playoffs, Detroit Lions.
Playoffs. I don't know. Like, the Lions are starting to get a little more comfortable with the playoffs, I got to say. Three times over the last 6 years, I don't know if we're definitely not like there ish, but I mean,
also hey. three times out of like the last 20 years though.
Hey, look, Lars, come on, man.
it's about your perspective on this. It's taking.
Sorry, I'm old. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine. No, I think a lot of Lions fans understand that too. We're just it's like again, hey, fresh year, fresh us. We just got to be positive about this, you know.
Not all of our football teams have the opportunity to go to three Super Bowls in 4 years, okay, Lars? All right.
That's true.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Well, we haven't seen the Seattle Seahawks since, I believe, what was it, last year when there was that just awful, Ryan, you remember the batted ball out of the...
No, I don't remember that game.
Oh, right. Wasn't Jeremy at that game? Wasn't this that game was the origin of the Detroit Lions fan fiction that Jeremy writes after every loss now.
You guys, we threw an interception on the 1 yard line in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, like we want to talk about pain here.
Lars, you don't understand. The field goal, the posts have not been moved yet for the Lions, so we don't understand what kind of pain that could be because we haven't even tasted that ever. Ever.
I feel you. I respect that.
Yeah. Hey, man, it's all a journey. It's all about where you're going. But let's talk about this a little bit, Lars. Let's talk about kind of the season Seattle has had. I think Lions fans know all too well the end of the year for the Detroit Lions. Three losses as Matthew Stafford's hand gets banged up against the Chicago Bears. And then you just kind of, you know, everything else that kind of happens after that. You lose Travis Swanson as the starting center.
No Theo Riddick.
You play very tough defenses in the Giants, in Dallas, and then, you know, to come home and just watch Aaron Rodgers just eviscerate you. But for the Seattle Seahawks, you know, very hot middle of the season, probably from like week three onward. But then kind of coming down about 500 in the stretch, you know, three wins, three losses, lose to the Bucs, only scoring 5 points, lose to the Packers in a very weird game. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that out of Russell Wilson. And then, of course, a close loss to the Cardinals. But you do beat the 49ers, the Rams, and just eviscerate the Panthers. So probably just talk to us a little bit about kind of how the end to the Seattle Seahawks season has gone. Like what's kind of brought them here?
Well, there's definitely been an unsavory taste, I think, for Seahawks fans down the stretch here. A lot of people were expecting this team to bring them, you know, right back to a, you know, another Super Bowl chance. And after they beat the Patriots, I think week 8 or 9, it was very, very likely is what everyone felt like. CJ Procias got hurt, then Earl Thomas got hurt. And so now both sides, offensive and defense, are struggling. The offensive line has been kind of a wreck all year. And although it appeared that they were kind of putting it together during that successful period, Tampa Bay really kind of exposed some of their flaws and holding them to 5 points, like you mentioned. Seattle bounced back the next week against the Carolina Panthers with a blowout win, but then that's when Earl Thomas broke his leg. Then Tyler Lockett has also been hurt within the last 2 weeks. So they're losing some of their playmakers offensively and defensively. So it doesn't look like the talented team that we've been used to. And as you mentioned, you know, the results haven't all gone Seattle's way, but even the games they've won have had something dissatisfactory about them. The Carolina game was the injury to Earl Thomas against the Rams. There was sort of a feud between the players. Richard Sherman got really upset about the coach's attempt to throw it again from the 1 yard line, and that's caused sort of a rift amongst the team. Richard Sherman is now refusing to speak with any media. He's pulling a Marshawn Lynch, and that's causing shockwaves kind of around the locker room, it seems like. And then just last week, they barely struggled by the 2-14 49ers with like a 2-point win that kind of resulted in a comeback for the 49ers after Seattle had swung into control of it. So there's a lot of doubts surrounding the Seahawks right now for Seattle fans.
And especially, I think probably the biggest injury there, like the biggest name you could talk about there that's probably changed the identity of this team is Earl Thomas. If you could just talk about like what really the Seahawks have lost with him and, you know, how they've been trying to really fill that big hole he's left on the defense.
Well, Thomas is a dynamic player. His intensity and character is kind of a little bit given the Seahawks part of its kind of mood as a defense. The Legion of Boom, everyone thinks of Cam Chancellor come climbing in and blowing up running backs and even, you know, tackles occasionally. But Earl Thomas is bringing a lot of physicality as well from the deep safety role. So, you know, he helps a lot in the run game and in picking up tackling coverage on the short side. And in the coverage, it's sort of almost irreplaceable. No safety kind of has the range that he has from sideline to sideline, playing as deep as he does. So Earl Thomas is really the driving engine for that Legion of Boom. I mean, everyone knows Richard Sherman. He can shut down half of the field. But, you know, with the fourth corner kind of being in rotation for the Seahawks over the last few years, Earl Thomas has kind of been the reliable sort of back end that allows them to play, you know, man and thirds with those cornerbacks without having to worry about what's going on the other side away from Richard Sherman. And then, like I mentioned, you know, Thomas can bring the big hits. He more or less ended Rob Gronkowski's season this year. And, you know, we all know who Gronkowski is. And he's about 100 pounds more than Earl Thomas. So he comes in like a missile. You know, Chancellor's like the load of bricks. But without Thomas over the top, and we've seen some deep passes. I think they've allowed 7 touchdowns in the 5 games since Thomas went out after allowing 9 the previous season. So Thomas is sort of like the string that ties the Seahawks backfield together. And without him, we've seen them not as efficient, not as effective. And without that confidence in the back end, you know, it also affects the pass rush. And really the whole defense pins around Earl Thomas's play. At least it's the way they've been designed it for the last 5 years.
Yeah, so with that being said, you know, Earl Thomas's role in the back end of the defense, he's so important. You know, you talk about he's the string that kind of, you know, is drawn, that draws the entire defensive backfield together. He's the straw that stirs the drink. He's super uber important. Another key injury that it seems like for the Seattle Seahawks that they're dealing with is defensive tackle Tony McDaniel. Talk a little bit about McDaniel's role for Seattle. You know, is he a guy who stops the run? Generates a pass rush. What role was Tony McDaniel having on this team, and do you think it's going to be a big loss not having him on Saturday?
Well, McDaniel's an interesting guy. He's a veteran. He was on, I think, Tampa Bay last year, but he's been on the Seahawks in the past. He was on their Super Bowl team in 2013. He actually retired this offseason and was in the state of Washington camping with his family when they had a few injuries during training camp, and the team called him in, decided to see if he wanted to try out, and he made his way back on the team. Has really been a stout player this year in that defensive line rotation, but he is really a rotation player. The Seahawks still have Jaron Reed and Ataba Rubin out front, which is a big part of their run stopping. But their run stopping is kind of secretly the key to their pass defense, because the way Seattle plays is really designed to get you into pass first situations by taking away that run. So Tony McDaniel will influence that rotation, and Seattle's line pretty thin. It depends on that rotation a lot. We'll see Michael Bennett probably kicking inside more often, which, you know, he can get to the quarterback from the interior, but, you know, he's much more effective coming off the end. But Seattle has guys like Frank Clark and Cliff Averill can provide that rush and let Michael Bennett jump inside. I don't think McDaniel's injury is going to hurt them too much, although it does thin them out a little bit on that front four.
Well, I mean, it's interesting we're talking so much about the kind of the line matchup already, because, Ryan, I know, like, we are really, like, the two biggest injuries for the Detroit Lions right now have been Riley Reiff and Travis Swanson. And from the looks of things on the injury report, Riley Reiff is rehabbing. He is going to probably be back, or at least questionable, for Saturday, which would be huge, because I think that was a really big part of why, of, like, what happens with the Lions offensive line in the Green Bay game, especially, like, when you talk about Stafford having, like, what, 1.8 seconds to throw the ball?
Yeah, not a whole lot of time. And, you know, getting Riley Reiff back, as Lars was just pointing out, Bennett and Cliff Averill, those are two guys coming off the edge that are mm-hmm. going to cause a whole lot of havoc in the Lions' backfield. And, you know, having Riley Reiff back would be a huge boost.
And the other one we keep an eye on is Travis Swanson. Now, he has been limited this week. He is back to practice. Unfortunately, I'm not sure what really to make of it right now. He said he would be available to the media on Thursday. Thursday rolled around. He was not in the locker room at all. I have no clue where he is with the concussion protocol. He might be doubtful for Saturday, which would still be a huge blow, especially as we're talking like the shift inside, because as we've been talking out, it's Graham Glasgow moving over from left guard and then trying to figure out how to plug that hole because Laken Tomlinson ain't doing it.
And that's really the biggest shift that can happen to that offensive line. We've seen that, you know, it's operating at its best when Glasgow's at left guard and Swanson's at center, and you have, you know, a healthy Riley Reiff, and Taylor Decker's been a pleasant surprise. Warford has played, for the most part, I think, more good than bad. But yeah, I totally agree, Chris. And I think that's where the loss of Earl Thomas is going to be a factor for sure. It's been a factor for the Seahawks, but you really come back to that. It always comes back to what goes on in the trenches. And, you know, a less than healthy offensive line for the Lions could spell for a lot of problems during their trip up the CenturyLink Field. The only other injury that I think we really need to talk about is the running back for Seattle Seahawks, CJ Procise, a rookie out of Notre Dame. Lars, tell us a little bit about CJ Procise and what his role was with Seattle in their offense, maybe how it's adjusted a little bit since his injury.
Well, CJ Procise is he's on the injury report because he's still active with the team. There are some significant injuries that Seattle has lost to the injured reserve. In addition to Earl Thomas, Tyler Lockett is one of their dynamic downfield receivers. In combination with Lockett, Procise has been a guy that is offered a multidimensional threat. He lines up in the slot. He lines up out wide. He plays tailback. And of course, that combination helps. Or it comes from the fact that he used to be a wide receiver at Notre Dame. He was converted to tailback after some injuries his senior year. So that really opened up Pete Carroll's eyes. I think he saw him as sort of a Reggie Bush type from the USC days, or even like in the mold of Percy Harvin from when he was with the Seahawks. A guy who can kind of take the ball to the backfield and run kind of dynamic routes downfield, and as well as play inside outside in the run game. He was really effective when he was in, but he was only played about, I guess, really three full games for the Seahawks this year. He hurt his wrist in game one, came back in about week six or seven, and then was hurt again in week nine. So, he offered the dimension that let the Seahawks beat teams like the New England Patriots in mid-year. So there's a lot of hope connected to his comeback, but it doesn't look like he'll be ready to play this week.
It's interesting you bring that up, too, because there is another Notre Dame guy that I would say is kind of comparable to him, and that's actually the Lions' own Theo Riddick. I mean, obviously, probably different. I know Procise is probably better running up the middle, but like Theo Riddick is kind of that same story, you know, this kind of weird hybrid from the Brian Kelly Notre Dame years with, tailback with some slot receiver conversion experience. And yeah, I mean, he's just kind of a multi-dimensional creature like that.
I think he's similar to Riddick in the sense that he's definitely a threat out of the backfield. I think Riddick runs a little bit more of the kind of traditional running back screen game. whereas Procise was lining up, kind of going, you know, straight out from the slot or going running these kind of dynamic patterns downfield. But certainly, he was a threat out of the backfield. And in combination with their second-year running back, Thomas Rawls, who brings more of that power kind of running game, CJ Procise was kind of a threat that made the defense guess what was coming next from the Seahawks. Without that, Rawls has been bottled up a little bit. You know, he was much more effective when they could play off Procise and the uncertainty in the defense.
All right, with that, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to be talking a little more about this game. We want to talk about positional matchups, unit matchups, get to things we think we know, and more banter. And we'll be right back on First Bite from PrideDetroit.com. All right, we're back here again on First Bite. Check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you need to, PrideDetroit.com, at PrideDetroit on Twitter. I didn't give out Lars's handle last time. It's at @beat_valley. If you want to follow him on Twitter, check him out there. And we are back here. As I said, Lars Russell in with us, and we're going to start talking about positional matchups. And I think we spend a lot of time in the first segment, guys, talking about the Seahawks defensive line against the Lions offensive line, because that's kind of where a lot of the, you know, the injuries have kind of taken place. But Lars, I want to talk about the Seattle offense for a second, because, I mean, on, I guess, well, on one hand, and Ryan can back this up, we've watched this Detroit defensive line bring absolutely no pass rush, you know, no matter what you want to think about his injury, Ezekiel Ansah just hasn't produced like he was last year. You know, we've kind of had some rotating with the defensive tackles. A'shaun Robinson has been good with batted balls, but, you know, in general, the pass rush just hasn't been getting home. And the one indelible image in my mind of Russell Wilson, and I know this one game isn't who he is, but I just keep thinking back to the Packers game where he threw five interceptions. So how much of that, like, how much of this is, I mean, Russell Wilson, he's still a great quarterback, but, I mean, is he just not getting, is he getting a lot of pressure put on him, or is he just facing off against some, a really good, some better secondaries, just kind of like, how do you see this kind of playing out?
Well, I mean, get ready to see something that you might not have seen this season, because Lions are going to have a pass rush in this game. Seattle's offensive line.
Don't believe it. I won't believe it until I see it, Lars.
I mean, everything you guys were talking about, the injuries, the shuffling to Riley Reiff and, you know, Graham Glasgow and moving guys from here to there, changing position, that's all gone on doubly full for the Seahawks this year. I mean, there was definitely pressure on Wilson in that Packers game. I think, you know, he took a handful of sacks, three sacks. I think the Tampa game was when he was really, really under the most pressure. But Green Bay had a couple of pass rushers hurt, which has probably contributed to some time. Wilson's interceptions were just kind of a combination of some really bad throws and some really bad breaks. You know, he had, I think, two or three balls bounce right off of the receiver's hands right into the defenders. Doug Baldwin, who's a really reliable receiver, he had a ball bounce right off his chest that was going to be a first down. So it was a little bit, you know, like probably 30% fluky game and another 30%, you know, Russell Wilson having trouble with the pass rush. And a little bit of kind of, you know, the Lambeau magic. But, you know, they've definitely struggled all year long against people who can, you know, attack the offensive line. Seattle is starting, I think, all five players were either on a new team or at a new position in their lives and or careers. I mean, Justin Britt, the center, is probably the most reliable player on the offensive line. He's played tackle and then guard last year and now center. It's his third position in 3 years for the Seahawks. They've got a rookie starting at right guard. They've got an undrafted rookie who's never played football until kind of a few snaps last year at Western Kentucky. He was a basketball player there, and then he played tight end last year. So he was playing. He's playing left tackle for the Seahawks. It's his first action at tackle of any kind since he was like in middle school, and that's not a joke. Their right tackle is a guy who was a converted tight end 3 or 4 years ago, another undrafted player, and they're one of their most veteran, I guess, players, if you want to put it that, is a guy who's starting for the first time at left guard. So they've got a hodgepodge offensive line. They've had a little bit of shuffling with injuries as well, although they're kind of back to the group they prefer at this point. But, you know, the guys through inexperience or just weakness haven't been very protective of Russell Wilson, which A, caused Russell Wilson to be hurt. And since Russell Wilson has been dealing with injuries to his MCL and his ankle since early in the season, he hasn't been as quick to escape the pass rush as he has in past years, which has all kind of colluded together to create a lot of difficulties for Seattle's passing game.
Yeah, and you talk about kind of just this hodgepodge offensive line being put together. The Lions did get to see that twice. They did get to play the Minnesota Vikings twice, and it really, if there was a game where it seemed like the Lions maybe had some success at least getting some push, it may have been those Minnesota games. But because their offense is so quick paced, in terms of snapping the ball, getting the ball out of Bradford's hands, it's well documented that he has the best single season completion percentage of any quarterback, and that just goes to show you what kind of statistic that is. But that aside, Seattle and Detroit. Now, I don't want to bring up too much history, but as a Seahawks fan, are you kind of regretting losing Max Unger for Jimmy Graham? Like, what kind of role? Because the Lions have been, they've been having trouble covering tight ends almost all season. Once they got some of their linebackers back healthy, like DeAndre Levy, once Josh Bynes returned to the team, once Thurston Armbrister started to not play, those problems seem to be mitigated. But talk a little bit about Jimmy Graham and his role in the offense, and has it become more pronounced in the past couple of weeks with the loss of, I guess Tyler Lockett was only out for a week, but do you think Jimmy Graham's going to get some more targets, some more looks now that Tyler Lockett is out?
Well, Jimmy Graham's been a dynamic player since he's gotten to Seattle. I think that, he was injured last year, and, he had some trouble kind of integrating himself on the offense early in 2015. So I think there's a reputation that he just failed altogether as a player.
Right. And that's unfair, right?
Yeah. I mean, he was having pretty good numbers if you stretched him out to, project him for a full season last year. It was never going to be what he did in New Orleans because they just don't have the volume of passing, especially last year when the running game was more successful. But Jimmy Graham has been a monster this year for the most part. He's definitely disappeared in some games. Part of that is just because Russell Wilson likes to spread the ball around. He's the kind of guy, firstly, he's always on the run, so he might be aiming for somewhere different. But him and Jimmy Graham have a really strong connection. Jimmy Graham was actually one of the only players on the current Seahawks team to attend Russell Wilson's wedding this summer. So they're fast friends. And those two are connected in the passing game quite frequently. You'll see it on the field, I think, Saturday. So Graham's not really been the issue. I think the team and the fans around the team certainly miss Unger and the veteran presence. I mean, he was a Pro Bowler for Seattle. He's been really solid for New Orleans. And so that trade has been questioned a lot in Seattle. I think they missed the first-round draft pick they gave up in the deal just as much as they do Unger, just because there would have been an opportunity to build their line a little bit more than they have. They drafted finally another offensive lineman in the first round last year, but they missed their first round pick for 2 or 3 years because of the Percy Harvin trade and then the Jimmy Graham trade. And they actually traded their first rounder after winning the Super Bowl, which became the pick for Teddy Bridgewater. So this year was the first time they even used a first round pick. So that trade for Graham kind of just lit the ire of Seahawks fans a little bit for that reason. And I think Graham's performance relative to the high numbers he put up in New Orleans hasn't been quite what you expected, but he's done well relative to Seahawks offense. He's got 900 yards this year. His, yards per catch is basically what it was in New Orleans. So he's been a dynamic player.
And I think the one other factor I would say going into this game, and it's not anything on the field, but it is CenturyLink. It is the fact that the Seahawks have lost, only once there all season, I believe is the right stat I've got in front of me. And have not had a first round playoff loss in Seattle. Actually, haven't had a playoff loss in the last six.
Well, they haven't lost at home recently in the playoffs. I think the last one was in 2004 against the Rams, yeah. And then the only other one in history was 1999 against the Dolphins. Seattle has for a long time had a really dominant home field advantage, but certainly under Pete Carroll, I think they're 5-0 in playoffs at home. They've had a couple of 8-0 seasons, and they typically have a winning record there. The noise is a factor. I think the players treat it like a real important duty to try to win in that place because of the history involved with it. So there's definitely a home field advantage. I don't think the Lions have won on the road since 1957 in the playoff.
Sounds about right. You could say any year predating prehistoric understanding of dinosaurs. Like, you know, the Lions haven't had a playoff win. Let's just leave it at that. Lions haven't had a playoff win in a long enough time, for sure. The next question that I kind of have for you is, where do you see the Seahawks being the most vulnerable, either on, you know, the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball? Where do you think that the Lions can be effective against Seattle on Saturday?
I would say that I think the Seattle as a team is most vulnerable on its offense right now. Its running game has really struggled this year, partly because of the same offensive line problems we already discussed, and as well as the way that those things have influenced Russell Wilson's play. But like you guys mentioned, I think Detroit doesn't really have the defense to match up very well to take advantage of those vulnerabilities. And so what I'm more concerned about, I think, is, you know, if Matt Stafford can really control the game, control the clock with his passing, you know, get to Golden Tate downfield, and especially in the kind of the middle sort of seam area, that's a place of vulnerability that has bothered Seattle even when Earl Thomas was healthy, kind of that space between, you know, where Cam Chancellor would be in the box and the deep third, where Thomas is usually looking for the what's going on over the top or in the edges of the field. So that seam can be a vulnerability. It hasn't hurt them too much this year, but I think Detroit has just enough playmakers in that spot to cause problems. But, you know, to be honest with you, because of Seattle doesn't have to respect Detroit's running game, I'm not terribly concerned about that matchup, but it's probably the biggest vulnerability. Although, you know, to throw out a wild card, Seattle has really had poor special teams the last few weeks. They've had picks blocked, snaps go on over the punter's head for safeties. They have a coverage error that led to a touchdown for the 49ers last week. So special teams might be the difference in this game if Seattle screws something up.
And that's really interesting you bring that up, because they did make the move to sign Devin Hester, because, man, I was watching that Arizona and Seattle game right there before. Was that on Christmas Day or was that Christmas Eve? Was that a Christmas Eve game?
That was a Saturday game, so right, like day before Christmas.
Yeah. Right, yeah, day before Christmas. And that Tyler Lockett injury when he broke his leg was just, it was tough to watch. And the fact that Fox kept on showing replay after replay of it.
That's awful.
It was just terrible. But, you know, Tyler Lockett was their main kind of return guy, right, in the punt game?
And he was all pro at as a returner last year. He was a little bit slow this year because he had a knee injury suffered in the early part of the season. So he was out for a little while, and then he wasn't, you know, returning as dynamically. He didn't have any touchdowns this year. I think his long return was 60 yards. But, you know, he definitely kind of got his legs under him late in the season and was doing great. Last week, Richard Sherman was returning punts, and he just fair catched every one because I don't want to get him hurt. And Paul Richardson, who's a reserve receiver, was returning kicks. So I'm curious to see if they're going to bring back Richardson, because Hester's been more of a punt specialist later in his career. But Hester may be out there returning kicks and punts. So we'll see if he can throw a little bit of that you know, playoff excitement into this.
Yeah.
All right. And last, real quick here, we're coming up in the final minutes of the podcast. Real quick from both Lars and Ryan, we'll start with Lars. One thing you think you know about this game, kind of like the one prediction of, like, you know, what you see reasonably happening within this game. Doesn't need to be a final score, but like an aspect of this game you think you're confident, like if you had to take a bet on it, that this would be like what you would say, this is going to happen.
Well, I think that Seattle can take advantage of Detroit's defense more easily than Detroit can do that to the other way. But if Detroit can somehow get into a lead, I've seen the way, I've watched a few Lions games this year. In fact, right before we got on the air, I was watching their match against the Saints because I was trying to figure out how in the world the Lions defense held Drew Brees to 13 points. And, you know, it was really like they didn't have much of a running game. That was a game when what's his name? I was going to say Theo Ratliff.
Theo Ratliff, one of my favorite NBA players of all time. We can talk about Theo Ratliff if you want.
I'll be delighted. No, when Theo Riddick went out, you know, then that's when we saw the emergence of Zach Zinner. But Detroit didn't really control the clock with running that game. Matt Stafford was just getting first downs. And so if they can get into a rhythm with the lead and control the clock, I think that's Detroit's best bet to try to squeak one out. But, you know, honestly, I think Detroit's offense is a lot similar to Seattle's right now. It's you know, got a lot of potency, but isn't really prolific. And so I think that matchup, just looking at the defenses, is more likely to be shut down.
Yeah, and I think that's, Ryan, just kind of leading into yours, I think that's kind of where Detroit's been, the Lions have been the most comfortable, is like getting a lead and then controlling the clock and just kind of really, you know, I saw even in the Green Bay game, it was all about like controlling the possession and just whittling down the clock, making for a short game where they can, you know, control with a couple of points.
Totally. The one thing that I think I know about Saturday's matchup between Detroit and Seattle is that it will be more annoying to learn about what kind of extra equipment each quarterback of their respective team is wearing.
Oh, God, yes.
Whether, I'm tired. Whether it's Matthew Stafford's glove and him being outside, I know that there's a slight chance of precipitation towards game time and, you know, later into the game, maybe the second half. But there's also talks that Russell Wilson might finally ditch the knee brace that he's been wearing ever since he, you know, suffered his MCL sprain against, I think that was San Francisco earlier in the year. I for sure know that during the broadcast, I will be extremely annoyed at some point when it comes to the kind of protective equipment and additives that the quarterbacks are donning.
This is on Fox too, isn't it?
I believe so.
Ugh, even worse. All right, I think that's about it for the podcast. Lars, thank you very much for joining us. Lars Russell, everyone. Check him out on fieldgoals.com, on Twitter, at @beat_valley. Lars, once again, thank you for joining us.
Word. Thanks, you guys.
And all right, we're getting at...
Hey, guys, one last message. I wanted to let you guys know that probably sometime next week, we're going to have all three of us back together, and we're going to have our Theo Ratliff podcast at some point. He's one of my favorite shot blockers of all time, so there's no way that we can't all get back together and do this again.
Perfect.
Absolutely. Why not? Why not? All right. Take care, everyone, and have fun on the game, and hopefully sometime after... Sometime late into the Saturday evening, we'll all be playing Africa. But until then, see you Starside.